Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We're New York and New Jersey Public Radio. And could that videotape conversation between Donald Trump and Billy Bush that seems to have dragged political culture down to a new low have an upside? That's a question New York Times Magazine staff writer Susan Dominus asked soon after the tape surfaced, writing, "The bus is the old boys club that women rarely get to see inside. But it may also turn out to be the wrecking ball that takes down the club for good," unquote. And Susan Dominus joins me now to explore this possibility of a silver lining. And we can take a caller or two at 212-433-WNYC on whether you think this locker room talk moment will have a cultural impact beyond the election cycle. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I don't think we want to exaggerate the upside here, but you point out that the tape did make one of Donald Trump's accusers feel better. Former People magazine reporter Natasha Stoynoff wrote, "I finally understood for sure that I was not to blame for his inappropriate behavior."
Yes, and I think you're right. We definitely don't want to overstate the quote-unquote happy side of this. And I don't even know that she felt better, but she certainly felt that she had not been imagining things, and it really recast her entire experience, I think, of what had happened. And I think her talking about it so openly then probably recast for a lot of other women experiences that they themselves have had. Also, of course, Trump speaking about it recast for many women their experiences.
Recast, but also re-traumatized, because we've had reports of that triggering traumatic reactions from women. There was another article in the Times that referred to how many psychologists are saying that women are coming to their sessions or are starting new sessions, having been, quote, triggered to relive some of the trauma that they had buried in whatever way over whatever length of time. Here's part of First Lady Michelle Obama's reaction to that tape from a campaign speech she gave last week in New Hampshire that referred to some of this.
And I have to tell you that I can't stop thinking about this. It has shaken me to my core in a way that I couldn't have predicted.
And that, of course, was in the context of a speech at a political rally for Hillary Clinton, but it's already being talked about as a speech that might outlast the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, talking about the triggering, I think it's interesting because even before the bus was released, I actually had women friends and women colleagues and journalists telling me that even the fat shaming of the beauty pageant contestant whom Donald Trump, tweeted about so viciously at 3 a.m, that even that bullying, that fat shaming, all of that's often part of abusive women. Even back then, that was triggering reports, triggering women in all sorts of really deep, complicated ways.
And Michelle Obama went on in that speech to describe what it called up for her and other women. Here's another 20 seconds.
We thought all of that was ancient history, didn't we? And so many have worked for so many years to end this kind of violence and abuse and disrespect, but here we are in 2016, and we're hearing these exact same things every day on the campaign trail. We are drowning in it.
And you connected this in your article to some of that ancient history, Anita Hill facing incredulity over her testimony of sexual harassment by then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas. I heard Vice President Biden, who then was on the Senate Judiciary Committee and was pretty tough on Anita Hill, kind of apologize again for that on an interview the other day. Maybe you want to remind some of our younger listeners what happened in 1991?
Sure. Well, so Anita Hill basically stepped forward during some confirmation hearings for now Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and said that she had been sexually harassed by him when she worked for him at the EEOC and the Department of Education. And when she testified, she was met with, you know, more than a dozen white senators grilling her about it and basically smearing her character, not so subtly. And basically, as the phrase became, they didn't get it. They thought she would, why would she step forward? Maybe self-promotion, maybe she was a little crazy. That was floated. That kind of idea was in the sort of atmosphere. And many people think that the spectacle of this black woman being doubted by all these white men who really just didn't know what that experience was like ushered in the 1992 year of the women, when so many women came into Congress and the Senate, the idea being that women voted. There was time for a change in power, and they'd had enough.
And now we have 20% of the Senate, at least, and I think the House as well, being women. And some people do attribute it to having really started with the Anita Hill incident and her accusation, which was never proven. And obviously, Clarence Thomas did get confirmed to sit on the Supreme Court ever since. There was a moment during all of that that the women who were already in the House marched over to the Senate. And that was very, telling and very dramatic at the time. I think that one's been mostly forgotten to history.
I mean, yeah, and it is a really interesting question to wonder just how much this kind of – why is it this sort of specific incident that does provoke that kind of real powerful visual or sweep so many women into office, as opposed to all the other, you know, kinds of issues for women that matter, you know, pay equity and reproductive rights. I think there's something extraordinarily visceral about it, and it's really a proxy for all of the ways that men have dominated women throughout history.
When you were assigned to cover gender in the election, is this the story you thought you'd be writing?
I think we thought it was going to be – I mean, who knew, really? And obviously, people did know a little enough about Trump to wonder how this was all going to play out.
And Megyn Kelly made it the first question in the first Republican primary debate. That gender question that is unforgettable to this day.
Yeah, I think that was pretty prescient of her. I think I suspected it was going to be more about the way that the world in general responded to Hillary Clinton as a possible presidential candidate. I didn't think we realized it was going to be so much specifically about Trump and all the issues that he kicked up.
It's almost like the Trump candidacy has made Hillary Clinton's gender and the potential historic first here the least noted part of the campaign.
Except, of course, that it does seem likely that the very fact of her is what has provoked some of his most extreme comments more recently.
You think?
I do think it's – I mean, Rebecca Traister argues very beautifully that, you know, it's no accident that Trump came along right now, that, of course, it was going to take sort of the most sort of sexist, reactionary kind of male figure to sort of emerge from the possibility of a female president, that is sort of that is a reaction to that very possibility.
Writer Caitlin Flanagan had a piece in the Washington Post asking basically, why do progressive women believe Donald Trump's accusers but didn't believe Bill Clinton's?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have been thinking about that too. Sometimes I think I actually just had this insight this morning. I wonder if it had something to do with the fact that Jennifer Flowers was one of the first big names that kind of came to public's consciousness that was during the campaign. And there was so much about the way that she reacted that I think really didn't sit well with people. You know, she had tapes that she was sort of showing, and maybe I think she sold her story. And so I think somehow there was this sense that you couldn't trust the women who were speaking out against him. It sort of set that feeling in motion. I mean, there are many reasons why, you know, many empathetic reasons why she may have been doing the things that she did. I'm sure she felt very erased at the time. So I wonder if that sort of set the tone a little bit.
Or there was at least the argument that on the part of many women, yes, Bill Clinton obviously did horrible things in his personal life, but his job is to run the country, and he's still going to be better for women than if he was impeached and thrown out of office and somebody like Newt Gingrich got a lot more power.
I wonder if that's what people were consciously thinking, especially when the Paula Jones and the Juanita Broderick allegations emerged. And I that was, I'm sure, part of it. I also think people at that time just saw those kinds of things differently and also thought that they happened at a different time, and maybe that excused it. People didn't know better.
Are you surprised that as many Republican women are still supporting Trump as there are?
It's definitely, I mean, personally, yes, it's very, very hard for me to understand it. But it's also hard to understand the extent of the antipathy against Hillary Clinton, I think, unless you're really in the world of the people who are hearing the media reports and are sort of in the communities that have just bought all into the idea that she's a crook and evil at the core.
Before you go, I saw that you and New York Times correspondent Jody Kantor had an online debate. And listeners, this is an interesting read on the Times website, whether last week was a great one for women or a bad one. Where did you land?
Well, I wished we had said a galvanizing one for women or a bad one, because I don't think anybody actually thinks it was a great one. In the beginning, I have to admit, I felt a certain sort of grim satisfaction in the irony that somebody who was saying and probably possibly doing such vile things to women was really going to suffer for it, and that it would in fact usher in possibly the first female president. Like, what beautiful justice. But as the stories emerged over the course of the week and you read more and more and more of them, it's actually, I think it's such a sad week for women. It really was.
New York Times correspondent Susan Dominus, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, an update on the Bridgegate trial. Stay with us.